Some crimes are never forgotten, others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Realpolitik. I am your host, Firas Mahdad. What's been going on? Has anything interesting happened? Well, very unfortunately, it seems that something too interesting has happened. My condolences to the Nothing Ever Happens crowd. I'm very sorry for your losses. And now we're in the middle of a regional war in the Middle East where the Iranians have decided that they are going to take the energy Samson option in order to force the United States and Israel to back down. This is a bit of a disaster, shall we say, for the rest of the world because the Americans don't really have a strategy. To the best of their ability to explain it, the Americans have been saying that what they're trying to do is, on the tactical level, destroy the Iranian missile program, destroy the Iranian nuclear program, and destroy the Iranian navy. And on the strategic level, Trump has been saying that maybe the military will decide to defect, or maybe there's going to be a change in regime. And Pete Hegseth is saying, we're not after a regime change war, but the regime has changed. Because obviously they killed the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who was, for all of his many, many faults, an excellent poster on X. Let's go through the American strategy and break it down into pieces. When it comes to the nuclear program, there's a reason this damn thing is built under massive mountains that are not penetrable to aerial attack. The Americans already tried to destroy the nuclear program. Trump said that it was absolutely obliterated, that it was erased, etc., etc., and that everybody who was saying otherwise is spreading fake news. So if it didn't get destroyed with the first B-2 strikes, which were not contested by the Iranians, why would it be destroyed this time? Obviously, the program can be weakened, it can be set back, all kinds of damage can occur, but destroying the nuclear program from the air isn't really very viable because the Iranians have always known that the nuclear program can be attacked from the air. That's why the damn thing is built under mountains. When it comes to destroying the Iranian missile program, well, we have to look at the Yemen example. The Houthi in Yemen control this corner of the country, this area around Sana'a, starting around Ib here and extending to Ma'rib and going all the way north, and a lot of this area is entirely useless. The Americans spent 45 days, if I remember correctly, pounding Yemen and couldn't stop it from firing more missiles at their ships. The Americans simply declared victory, said that they reached an agreement with the Yemenis so that they'd stop attacking American assets and allowed the Houthi to continue closing the Bab el-Mandeb Strait here against Israel. When you think about Iran, it's not exactly a besieged country. It's massive. It's a dozen times the size of northern Yemen, easily. And most importantly, it has an open supply line to Russia and China. You have the Caspian Sea here. You have one of the terminals of the Belt and Road here in Kazakhstan. And you have Russian ports here on the Volga, meaning that the Chinese and the Russians can keep supplying Iran indefinitely, getting their weapons to Iranian ports in the Caspian, and then allowing the Iranians to continue with more limited missile manufacturing. Obviously, given that their skies are open to American and Israeli attacks, this won't be that easy. But the skies of Yemen were equally open to American and Israeli attacks. And the Yemenis were able to continue developing, using, firing missiles at Israel, despite being bombarded. So that's the second leg of the strategy. The third leg of the strategy is destroying the Iranian Navy. Now, this is actually pretty easy. The Iranian Navy isn't so much a navy in the modern sense of the world, in that they have aircraft carriers and big destroyers and so on and so forth. They have a few flagships. These look like they've been already eliminated by American airstrikes. And then what they rely on is an endless amount of small boats that can carry anti-ship missiles, like limited range anti-ship missiles. They rely on unmanned maritime vehicles that could be fired or launched from anywhere on the Iranian coast. And they rely on drones to attack the Strait of Hormuz. So destroying the Iranian Navy, such as it is very easy in some sense, very difficult in another sense, because they can keep firing these unmanned marine vehicles and these drones with the intention of attacking shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. So the three tactical legs of the American strategy against Iran don't actually make a lot of sense. If they did, they would have done it a long time ago, and the Iranians have been preparing for precisely this outcome since the 1980s, when their navy was initially destroyed in the Praying Mantis operation. And these kinds of small boats in the Gulf, they are a massive headache for everyone. And the Iranians can keep attacking from within the Gulf, and then using the geography of this region, which is incredibly mountainous. I mean, just look at the terrain here. It's mountains all around. They can just pop out of a cave, fire something into the water, and withdraw. And it doesn't have to have a particularly impressive range, meaning that they can do this for a pretty long time, especially with an open supply chain to China. At the strategic level, Trump is saying the Iranian people will rise up, they will take control of the country, it's not our job to plan for the day after, and maybe the Iranian military will defect. Let's think about this, because unfortunately, Trump is retarded. The military won't defect. If they survive this war, they will claim to have defeated the United States. And they will use that to do the transition that always happens in Islamic countries, which is to go from an official religious rule to a less official military rule, which was already the case in Iran. Plus, even though a lot of the leadership has already been taken out, including the supreme leader, it seems that the constitutional mechanisms of Iran have functioned. And now there is a triumvirate, including the president, the head of the judiciary, and a scholar from the Guardian Council, who have replaced Khamenei. And a gentleman by the name of Ali Larijani, who used to be a commander in the IRGC and who used to be the speaker of the Iranian parliament, and who's very connected across the Gulf region to the Russians and to the entire Iranian establishment, which backs the regime, he's now the guy in charge. Plus, the Iranians have moved to what is referred to sometimes as a mosaic defense. Because they know that their communications are monitored, they've allowed every IRGC base to sort of operate quasi-independently. They're probably communicating using a sealed-off network going underground, a land network going out underground, or through couriers, and they're using the massive geography of Iran to just continue with their operations, and that means that they can keep firing until they're actually satisfied. So what have the Iranians done, and what does their strategy look like counter to the American strategy? Well, for one thing, they have declared they've sort of holed up in the mountains, as this video shows. I mean, just take a look here. This is a cave in the mountains with dozens of drones, missiles, pretty much everything that they need. Its own, like, this kind of looks like a runway, and I wouldn't be surprised if they can launch from within the mountain. And by doing that, they are readying themselves to fight an incredibly long war. Now, the first target of this war To my surprise, to some extent, I mean, look, these are sort of short-range missiles that are stockpiled there. One of the first targets of this war has been energy infrastructure. And the Iranians are going around pretty much wrecking as much of the energy infrastructure in the Middle East as they can. This is Ras Tanura in Saudi Arabia, one of the world's biggest oil refineries. A huge amount of oil goes through it and then gets exported as products, and it's on fire. They've attacked Ras Laffan in Qatar and Musayid. These are two facilities that are responsible for liquefied natural gas production. Qatar exports around a quarter of global natural gas, and that's been cut. And they have the option of continuing to attack energy infrastructure with the objective of either forcing these regional companies to declare force majeure and therefore go into a kind of energy embargo against the world, or they will just destroy things in the region endlessly with pinprick drone attacks, because the range is quite short and they can do this with the drones that you saw hidden in the mountains. And they will continue to do this until they make the Gulf states cry uncle and tell the Americans, you have to leave our country, you can't use our airspace, we are cutting ourselves off from you. And even if the Gulf does that, the Iranians could decide to continue attacking. So they've declared essentially total energy war. Their own energy is getting bombarded, which is why I thought they would hesitate about taking that option. But they decided, no, screw it. We would rather the entire region burn to the ground than us lose power, which theologically is a very Shia way of thinking. The Shia tend to think in terms of them bringing down everything on themselves so that they wouldn't have betrayed Hussein a second time. I can explain that in the Q&A later. I can explain the theology a little bit later. And by the way, if you have any questions, just post them and I'll go through them as usual. But the Iranians have decided that they're going to go for total energy war. Now, the Israelis are saying that the rate of fire in Iran has actually increased, not decreased. And we've seen some of the Iranian missiles being fired with a kind of shield of projectiles around it that are intended to confuse air defense systems. And the key issue is the air defense systems that the West has, that the Americans and the Israelis and the Gulf have. They don't have anywhere near enough. And the Iranians can keep on firing until they deplete these. And then when that happens, their own production capacity will be depleted as well, of course, because it's getting bombed right now. But what also happens is that the missiles that they do fire are less likely to have interceptors available to deal with them. So the Iranian plan seems to be, we're going to keep firing indefinitely. And that's a real problem because of the shortage of air defense missiles. Now, the earlier estimates were that the Americans have enough to launch a very intensive bombing campaign for 8 days. This could be wrong. I mean, the U.S. is a huge country with a massive defense industry. They could fire a lot. But in particular, when it comes to the terminal high-altitude air defense, the THAAD systems, which are the only ones that have a chance in hell of intercepting the Iranian hypersonic missiles, they don't have enough. They produce 10 or 12 every year. A quarter of those was depleted already in the 12-day war in June, and the Iranians have fired more in the past couple of days than they did during the 12-day war. So the Iranian rate of fire is much higher. And the intention behind that is to deplete these missile systems so that even though the Iranian manufacturing is going to get eroded, when they get resupply from China and Iran and Russia, that resupply is facing a lot less obstacles to hitting its targets. Which explains why the Iranians have refused negotiations. So far, reporting has it that Trump reached out through the Italians and tried to reactivate the Omani mediation channel and so on. But the Iranians have said, no, we don't want to have any talks. And the man actually in charge of Iran, Ali Larijani, came out and said, we're not interested in negotiations. We're not interested in talks. We are prepared for a very long war, and we are going to continue with that war indefinitely. And you can see the logic behind it. Already, natural gas prices are spiking. I've seen 25% and I've seen 50% in a piece I wrote recently on my own blog, that I wrote today on my own blog. I said 50%, but I could be wrong about that. And if you haven't subscribed, please do subscribe, even to the free part, if you don't want to pay that much money. But the Iranian logic is, we are going to cause a global economic crisis, and we are going to use that crisis to force the Americans to back down. And given the fact that in the previous two rounds of negotiation, first in June in 2025, and just now where the negotiations were ongoing up until, you know, a day before the war started, they have no interest in negotiating. What they want is to continue the war long enough for the Americans to back down and end the war without any preconditions. That's what the Iranians are after. Which makes sense, because why would you trust American negotiators? The position of the Almani foreign minister, who was the lead mediator on the nuclear issue, was that they were very close to an agreement, with the Iranians having agreed to dilute their enriched uranium stockpile. So they have uranium enriched to 60%, which isn't enough for a nuclear weapon, but which is pretty close to what's needed, because the way that enrichment works, enriching from 0 to 5% is harder than enriching from 5% to 60%, because you have more of the heavy isotopes, and then you can sort of spin the centrifuges and allow the different isotopes to separate, and that gets you to where you need to get faster. So the Iranians were willing to essentially dilute all of that stockpile, maintain a very minimal symbolic enrichment capacity at 3%, and they were ready to make a deal. And that's where the Americans, that's when the Americans decided to strike. And indeed, it seems that the Americans decided to attack precisely because a deal was close. Because the issue for the Israelis, who are the main instigator behind this war, is not the Iranian nuclear program anymore, because that can be monitored by the International Atomic Energy Agency. Limits can be imposed. That can be resolved. The issue is the ballistic missile program. And the ballistic missile program is proving its effectiveness right now in this war, because if you look at the images that are coming out of Israel and at the images that aren't coming out, and I'll explain that in a second, you'll see that the Israelis have a massive problem. Already there are reports that the Iranians have taken out the main desalination facility in Israel, which accounts for 20% of Israel's water. Now, if these reports are true, that's a massive blow. And CENTCOM put out a tweet saying that the Iranians have attacked a bunch of civilian targets, including the Haifa refinery. Haifa in Israel doesn't just have a refinery. It has also a massive chemicals complex, which basically acts as something of a chemical weapon within Israel. In the past, the Israelis moved some of these assets away from Haifa, but that's not very easy. I think the refinery sits here. You can see this huge complex that is, this is energy storage here and things of that nature. And you could see that if you blow up that complex, the kind of fumes that you get ends up acting as a massive chemical weapon. And the Iranians are pounding central Israel pretty hard, with the Israelis essentially imposing enormous restrictions on reporting to make sure that nobody can hear about the actual extent of the damage they're taking. And that's part of the Iranian strategy. They understand that the Israelis are the main instigator of this war, And so what they're doing is attacking as much in Israel as they can in order to deplete the interceptors and then fire more advanced missiles like the Khurram Shahr and like newer versions of missiles that they have with the aim of properly crippling Israeli infrastructure. Knowing that if enough infrastructure is destroyed, the domestic crisis in Israel will force the Israelis to back down and end the war. So the Iranians in this are acting in a way that suggests that they're not interested in a quick end of the war, and that a prolonged war, albeit one that causes insane amounts of damage within Iran, is better for Iran than a short war, because what we've seen after short wars is that the Americans will go back and try to bomb the Iranians again and again. And if there is one thing that they can survive, is regular attacks on them that make them look weak and delegitimize the regime. Whereas a very long but enormously expensive war, like the Iraq war, which lasted 8 years, suits the Iranians better. And they have an open supply line through the Russians and the Chinese. Whereas during the Iraq war, the Iranians got so desperate that they had to buy weapons literally from the Israelis to fight Iraq. So the thinking of the two sides is completely different. And it is very hard to see how there is going to be a reconciliation. Because again, the Iranians have absolutely zero reason to trust American negotiators. Every time they've negotiated under the Trump administration, what it has led to is another war. And so they need to continue this indefinitely. And so you see that the punishment against energy infrastructure that the Gulf is taking makes a lot of sense from the Iranian perspective. They are willing to go so far as to burn so much of the region to make it worthless for the Americans to stay there. And the mindset there is exactly the mindset of the Syrian regime under Assad, whose famous slogan was, "Assad or we burn the country." And the IRGC seems to be operating on the idea that it's either us or we burn down the entire region. And it's not like the Gulf states can do much about this, because we've seen several things. Firstly, we've seen that the Iranians have pretty good intelligence. They were able to identify Americans, including reportedly a CIA team, in hotels in the region and to specifically target that. They are hitting the symbolic high-profile things in the Gulf. So they hit Palm Jumeirah, they hit Burj Dubai, they hit these kinds of flashy assets that the Gulfies are absolutely obsessed with. And the message there is, we can really cut you where it hurts and make you understand that you aren't safe so long as you are in partnership with the Americans. Plus, so far, they're only attacking energy targets. If they were to hit power generation, if they were to hit desalination, that would create a humanitarian crisis for pretty much everybody in the Gulf. Because the Gulf relies on an insane amount of power just to keep things cool enough for the cities that they have to be habitable. Temperatures in the Gulf go up to 50 degrees in the summer. And the Westerners, who are the backbone of the economy throughout the Gulf, cannot function in these temperatures. So if they hit power generation, it's a disaster. If they hit desalination plants, it's a total disaster. It's the middle of the bloody desert. There is no water. They rely on the desalination plants to function. So the Iranians seem actually to have escalation dominance, meaning that the aerial assets that the Gulf states have are going to stay parked in their place, because if they participate in this war, the economic losses that they will suffer from are not going to be recoverable. Or at least that's the threat. And if the Gulf states decide to call the Iranians bluff and actually conduct attacks against Iran in partnership with the Americans, Well, then the drones will go to even higher value targets rather than refineries. In countries like Saudi Arabia, pretty much the entirety of the energy ecosystem relies on one facility, Abqaiq, which the Houthi hit once in 2019, and they disabled oil production for a period of time, but it was a small pinprick attack designed to be symbolic, to show it was at the time intended to humiliate Trump after he had fired John Bolton, and it was intended to humiliate the Saudis and force them to reach an end to the war in Yemen. So the Iranians know exactly the layout of these facilities, and they can knock out Abqaiq with something that is much heavier. In the UAE, the comparable facility is Habashan, where pretty much all of the oil that is pumped out of the fields is concentrated in one processing facility, and it's treated, all kinds of chemical processes are involved in order to make it usable and easier to refine, and then from there, it's pumped onto the coast and it's loaded onto ships. The ports and the storage facilities in those ports, as well as these kinds of massive processing facilities in Saudi Arabia and in the UAE, can be fully disabled if the Iranians want to disable them. And that's a big problem for the Gulf states. It puts them in a fundamentally untenable position. And the idea is to force these states either to put pressure on the Americans to end the war, or to separate themselves from the Americans.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.